Monster Man, bonus episode, September 2022. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a bonus episode going out to all my Patreon backers at all levels, as a way of thanking you for your continued support. It feels like September has just flown past, but when I look back on it, I have actually done quite a lot, I think. A lot of my time has been taken up with my quote-unquote day job. I mean, it's just another part-time job, but it's the one that is most like a real job that I think of, which is my tutoring. And that has obviously been a little busier with the beginning of the school year. So a lot of time that I would have been writing has been taken up with that. But the good news is that I finished my largest writing commitment a couple of months ago. I'm trying to do a couple of smaller kind of game jam projects just to sort of keep my hand in and also maintain sort of momentum in my online presence. So, you know, even if I'm not putting out any big projects over the winter of 2022-2023, although one big thing should be coming out, but, you know, even if I weren't, I wouldn't kind of fade from view. And also they are kind of sort of teaching myself things where I'm taking on things that are a little bit different from what I would normally write, because in that kind of experimentation friendly game jam environment, you know, the consequences of failure aren't huge. You know, the whole point is to be able to try new things. Then of course I immediately got distracted by my own new thing, which is a scenario that I'm writing, but I wouldn't expect that to really take final shape for another couple of months. It's coming along, but my experience is always that I have a huge burst of creativity at the beginning of things, and then when I have to get down to the nuts and bolts of stat blocks and maps and so forth, that it gets a bit more challenging. I had the good news that Begonia Mind Murders is going to be on, you know, my favorite scenario, well, review is not the right word, discussion podcast, Fear of a Black Dragon, so that's pretty cool. There was also a Begonia Mind Murders review over on 10-Foot Pole. I respect 10-Foot Pole's reviews, so I was interested to see that, and I would call it mixed, you know. What was interesting to me, and again, this is not a criticism of the review, but interesting in my perspective, is that for Bryce, the reviewer, the towns in Begonia Mind Murders were clearly the focus of the action, and he wanted to hear more about them, whereas for me, it's the camp. But so, you know, it's always interesting when you've run something and you have a mental image of it, it can be a challenge, and I realize this is what, like, beta testing is for, it can be a challenge to really feel how other people perceive it without your own preconceptions. So, worth thinking of, that was a valuable reminder. So despite the fact that it wasn't, like, the most glowing review I've ever received, I was nonetheless pleased. I sort of felt like I'd arrived, which is weird because all kinds of people who have patently not arrived get reviewed on 10-Foot Pole. I did a gaming convention. That was the Equinox Gaming Convention in St. Ives. Convention, like, it's pretty small. It's more like somewhere between a club night and a convention, and I don't think that the organizers would be too upset with my saying that, I hope. You know, we weren't there with the plan of making money, the History and Games Lab, but we didn't sell no books, so that was nice. We did sell a couple, and in fact, I believe we sold out our stock of both Lion Rampant, The Crusader States, and Lion Rampant, A Viking in the Sun, and it was only my timely intervention that prevented us from selling my personal copy of Lion Rampant, A Viking in the Sun. I had not noticed that it had got mixed in with the retail stock. I mentioned that our new book came out, The Last Samurai Rebellion Supplement for the Game, The Men Who Would Be Kings. I actually didn't realize that I contributed to this book. I did recommend some sources for illustrations. That's kind of the extent of my involvement, and I've worked cons for it, but actually some of my photography is in there. I took them with the idea that they'd be used in publicity materials. I didn't realize that layout was still not quite done at the time that I took them, and one or two of my shots wound up in the book, so that's pretty cool. I actually have two books now that I have, and some magazines, that I have photography credits in, which is not something I would have expected to say, because, you know, to me that's more of a testament to how readily available okay cameras are to the non-photographer. Because I don't think my photography is great, but, you know, if I take enough pictures, I can get one or two that are
good enough to use in print, which is not something you could have said about me prior to the invention of the smartphone. I have an older phone, and that's very visible in the many problems it has, but has an excellent camera, and I would hate to lose it. So yeah, by our own modest lights, I think that we were successful there, and I really like the idea of that kind of event, of a small con focused on certain types of gaming, and to me, it was the kind of, like, chat aspect of it that was almost more valuable than any of the games that I didn't wind up playing. I did sell a book of my own, and I bought some dice and I bought some miniatures, you know, because as one does. In gaming, what else? I started playing in a weekly game of the Free League Alien RPG, which is, I've only had a couple sessions so far, so I don't know that I really can say anything about the system, but it seems fine to me. It's actually my first time playing one of these Year Zero games, even though I own a couple of them. I definitely own Mutant Year Zero, and I think I own Tales from the Loop. It's really interesting. Our game sessions are very short, but very frequent, and as a result, the pacing is very interesting. Like, stuff happens at an incredible rate, which I actually really like, and it is very interesting because I think that's something that I struggle with. I have, I think, quite a slow burn GM style that was built up, like, when I was younger, and I was playing in games where the schedule was a little bit more relaxed. But I think that's not really what my schedule is like now, and I still struggle to shake some of the GMing habits. One of our worst habits as GMs is to think about time solely in game terms and not in real world terms. It's the time in the real world that matters, right? And we sometimes have a tendency to overlook that. So I am kind of taking notes in terms of the pacing of this game, which is very eventful and exciting, in terms of applying that to my own games, which typically don't have very long sessions. The 5e game that I play in, as opposed to the one that I'm running, has this sort of slight problem where sessions tend to be quite short, but we're still comparatively high-level 5e characters, which means that combats tend to be pretty long. So we're about to have our, I think, fifth session of the same dungeon. Now, it hasn't all been one huge combat. Obviously, lots of other things have happened. But the problem with this is that if you were to look at it in terms of the length of time that is being played just in isolation, I think this would be quite reasonable, right? It would be two or three sessions in the same little part of the world. But the problem is that we only play every other week and the sessions are quite short. So what this means, and we don't always make all our sessions because seven adults in the same place at the same time, or even the same virtual place, can be quite challenging. But what that means is we have been doing this fight, chase scene, whatever thing for actual months. Even if you were added up together, you'd only get like two or three regular 4-hour gaming sessions. But it is months. So it feels like a really long time. I mean, I don't know about you listeners, but this is something that I find myself running into a lot as I try and schedule games in a world where, like, people have plans on the weekends, so you gotta play on weeknights, but people have demanding responsibilities and they have kids and so on. So it's rare to get more than a couple of hours on a weeknight. Need to work on my pacing. I ran my Rogue Trader miniatures game. That was fun. Very RPG-like. Next game, I will try to up the level of, like, player versus player in it, but I'm trying to make it be player versus player competition rather than always all-out war, which is tricky. It's hard to predict how players are going to react sometimes. Although, I mean, they correctly assumed, I think, that the opposition was going to be quite tough, and therefore they needed to cooperate. But this time we'll see how it goes. Roller Derby is back. Roller Derby was previously back, but because I had COVID, Allison, who, you know, had been exposed to me, and although she was testing negative at the time, it had only been a few days, she was unable to play in the first match of the season that she could have played with. It's been an abbreviated season, only a few games. And so she's going to be in a game this coming weekend, which sadly means that we were unable to go to the LARP event that we wanted to, although seeing that there are going to be huge rail disruptions that weekend, maybe it's not such a bad thing, because we would have had to take those trains to get to where we were going. But we are now coming back into a sort of scheduling environment where multiple things that I want to do going on at the same time is happening, which is not really a thing that's been the case since late 2019, early 2020. So I've scheduled myself another LARP. I'm going to go volunteer to crew another LARP that's being run by some friends of mine, just to kind of like scratch the itch a little bit. But it does mean that I've got a month that looks like, so I'm going to London in mid-November to see the Mountain Goats. Then the weekend after that, I'm crewing this LARP. Then the weekend after that is Dragon Meet. Then the weekend after that, I'm going to be in the Netherlands. And like the, think the weekend before the Mountain Goats, I got something on as well, but I don't even remember what it is. Oh, it's Virtual Grog Meet, which I still haven't come up with my game for. I always try to run games I don't run very often at Virtual Grog Meet, but I don't know if that's going to work here. We'll see how that goes. A couple of weeks ago, I was on my way to do a tutoring session when the message arrived as I was cycling to the student's home that the student was not well and couldn't do the session. So I got, and I feel kind of guilty for this because, you know, I don't want to be glad that somebody got sick, but it is always nice when you get one of these every once in a while. It's like a little treat. Too many of them, and then you're like, oh, I feel bad for the student, or I feel bad for kind of like wasting the time. But what it meant was I could run some errands, and then I had like an hour off that I was getting paid for to go do some like secondhand bookshop and charity shop browsing on a weekday afternoon, and I picked up some books, and some of them are things I read this month. The first was Bug Hunt. This was part of the Osprey Adventures series, which was kind of like around the same time as the Dark Osprey stuff, so I want to say like 2010-ish, but maybe, no, that's maybe a little bit later than that, actually. Maybe like, I don't remember the exact date, but it was okay. It's basically like an Osprey book, but about a fictional thing, but is not presented like an Osprey book. And I think that that's the major problem of all of those Osprey Adventures and Dark Osprey books, is that they are published by a publisher that does nonfiction books, and they're presented as nonfiction books about fictional things, but they're not presented in the same way as the publisher's nonfiction books, which are so recognizable. So feels weird to me. I thought it was okay, but it was sort of like a source book for an RPG that doesn't exist. But the problem was that when you're bug hunting, it's so kind of derivative of one particular set of science fiction stories, or a couple of different particular sets of science fiction stories, that it feels a little redundant. Whereas with something like Ken Hite's The Nazi Occult, like, I can fully believe that this weird subject is something that Ken Hite knows so much more about than I do, that even if he's doing fiction about it, his expertise will inform that in an interesting way. But something that's a complete make-em-up, like, it was fine, but it didn't stand out to me. I also read some English translations of the comic series Dylan Dog. Dylan Dog is a very popular comic book in Italy. Indeed, I think it's the best-selling comic book in Italy. And Dylan Dog is a kind of, like, supernatural investigator private eye character who lives in a kind of absurd world. Increasingly, as the stories go on, things get weirder and weirder, and a lot of the stories are less kind of like mystery structured than just like these surreal explorations of other dimensions and things. There was a film in the 2010s with Brandon Routh in the title role, and in conjunction with this film, they translated some of the stories into English and published them in a collection with a nice cover by Mike Mignola. And indeed, you know, the character that Dylan Dog sort of most resembles is really Hellboy. They're okay. I actually wasn't that moved by them. Partly I think it's because I sometimes struggle with things that are presented with like the trappings of a genre, but are not actually examples of that genre. And the Dylan Dog stories are not really mysteries, right? Like, he's a private eye and people come to his office and they ask him for his help and blah, 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 blah. But the stories aren't mysteries, right? They owe more to like the giallo kind of genre, but not with all the murder. Well, actually, there are a bunch of murders. Anyway, and those often have a kind of like dream logic, or alternatively, they're just not like very well plotted. And that's sort of how this felt to me, where there's never really anything that the character does to solve the mystery necessarily, or that the reader could do to figure things out. You're just kind of on a tour of weird supernatural happenings. But the problem is, most of those are pretty old hat. There are some good ones. I will say, you know, I said they're mostly pretty old hat, but not entirely. So I definitely got my money's worth. I paid like a pound for it. And it was interesting to see how some of these genre tropes were being presented in like a different market. That was interesting too. So I'm not saying it was bad, but I personally, like, I've now read 7 issues of Dylan Dog, and I feel like I've read as many as I probably want. I feel like I got the gist of it. I also read Andy Adams's book, The Log of a Cowboy. This is a very interesting text to me. So it's a 19th century book about being a cowboy and, you know, being on the cattle trail and all that stuff. Andy Adams was a cowboy, and then later on in life, he got annoyed at, like, you know, Western fiction, which he thought was misrepresenting what life as a cowboy was really like. So he wrote this book. But this book is a work of fiction. It is a novel about a cowboy, but it's just, like, based on Andy Adams' actual experiences. I presume, like, combining different elements. But it's written as though it were, like, a journalistic account of being a cowboy. It's not particularly novelistic. It's weird. But it was good. It definitely, like, if you think about kind of wilderness adventures, it's a genre that I'm never that excited about. One of the ways that you can tell that I'm stressed out at times is if you catch me rereading Patrick O'Brien novels, but I always skip the storms. Just man versus nature conflicts aren't very interesting to me. I don't know why. There's only half as many characters as normal, I guess. Again, not by any means a bad book, and I got it for like 50 pence, so it's worth noting, of course, that this is like the authentic voice of a guy from post-Civil War Texas, which is to say it's super racist. So, you know, if you read a lot of stuff in this era, that's just unavoidable, but obviously not everyone's idea of a fun read. Some interesting stuff, particularly in terms of like structuring wilderness encounters and in terms of what is important to the characters in a Western milieu. If I was running a Western game, I'd buy it in a heartbeat. I really love the image, like whenever they arrive in town, the cowboys get like an advance on their pay in their pockets. They've been out on the lonesome range eating dirt and drinking sweat for months. And the first thing they do when they go into town is go to the barber. Not to a saloon, not to a gambling house, but to get a haircut and a shave because they want to look presentable. Which I thought, like, that, yeah, that makes perfect sense, but it's not what you would think of. And that kind of thing, I think, is a fun inclusion. So if you see Andy Adams' The Log of the Cowboy, it's in print from Dodo Press, who are those guys who keep, like, public domain texts in print. Happen to run into that. It's probably on Kindle. You could probably just Google it. But if you run a Western game of any kind, definitely worth flipping through and like pulling out some of the characters or ideas. I'm still in the process of reading that book that I'm supposed to be reviewing for 14 times and I've had for like 2 months. I might try to finish that this evening. I'm still partway through Morris's Geography is Destiny, which I keep starting and stopping because I get distracted by other things. And I started reading Becky Ragg Sykes' book Kindred, which is about Neanderthals, which is really interesting so far. For all that I have a couple of archaeology degrees, is not really an area that I know that much about. You know, it's very, very, very before the period that I study. But it's absolutely fascinating. And a lot of the things, I did know that a lot of the things that we sort of historically have thought we knew about Neanderthals are actually, you know, somewhat dubious in terms of the evidence for them. And that there is a lot of new evidence for Neanderthal society and whatnot. But that's kind of all that I knew, so I'm finding it very informative. What did I watch? Had I watched Star Trek Strange New Worlds by the last time we recorded this, I thought it was pretty good. It's kind of what if you made just regular old Star Trek, but with a little bit of like arc plotting, you know? Even if it's just like seeding elements of a character a few episodes early and then paying them off later and then having people remember those elements a few episodes after that. Like, it's not too arcady, but it has some arc stuff, particularly stuff that comes from those characters' appearance on Discovery, which I think, I mean, I like Discovery, but I feel like those are maybe like the weakest parts of the show. It's got good performances, and it doesn't have the kind of like the sexism of classic Star Trek. You know, it has more than a couple of female characters and it gives them maybe more of a fair shake. So it's sort of what if you took the basic premise of Star Trek and you just tried to make it in the 2020s, which I think is actually not a bad idea. There's lots of shows that I'd love to see done that way. I keep thinking about who there is today that could play Columbo. You know, early Columbo, he's actually not that old. Bear with me here. Michael Peña. Anyway, my point about Strange New Worlds is that it's very RPG-y in my mind, in that it is, you know, it's a series of interconnected scenarios. It has drama between and involving the members of the crew, but that isn't always the main point. Like, it's got the thematic linking of, like, plot to character that is a feature of Star Trek, but also notably of things like Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And my goodness, that Anson Mount's got a head of hair on him. I'll tell you what. I did not particularly care for him in his Marvel show, The Inhumans, yeah, where he played Black Bolt, but he grows on you in this one. It's extremely weird that he is doing a Shatner impression for quite a lot of this, and then when, spoilers for Strange New Worlds, I guess, Jim Kirk shows up, the guy playing him is not particularly doing a Shatner impression? That's odd. I watched Thor Love and Thunder, which is so-so. A character like Thor, who is a little bit too bombastic for a modern audience, is a delicate balancing act. Like, is actually trickier than you would think, right? Because there's this element of the absurd and of comedy, but you also need a real sense of, like, the grandeur and scope of what's going on. And I feel like the third film does an okay job of balancing those. And I feel like when Thor's in the Avengers, it does an okay job of balancing those. But I don't know about this one. There were a lot of bits of it that I liked, but I don't know that they actually, like, added up necessarily. Oh, I watched that cyberpunk show, Cyberpunk Edgerunners, which I actually thought was all right. There were some bits of it that I wasn't wild about, but as like a kind of, and of course, you know, hyper-violent, over-the-top visuals, all that stuff. Like, not for all audiences, certainly. But actually, you know, I enjoyed it, and I liked its kind of, like, classic crime drama elements, and I like that it allowed the characters to have kind of, like, some kind of victory, but still maintaining the cyberpunky idea that, I don't know if you can't fight City Hall, but, like, it's pretty hard to fight City Hall. There's probably a lot of other things I'm not thinking of. I'm working on a bunch of different projects at the moment. I should write up a summary at some point, because I had, like, a pretty good slate, and then over the last few months I've completed the majority of them, and then now we're starting a new raft of things. But at present, I don't know that I have the schedule clear in my mind right now. So a lot of things are all starting at the same time. So I guess stand by for some announcements about some free or low cost things that I'll be putting out over the next few months. But yeah, anyway, that's what I've been up to. Gosh, it sounds like a lot. That and making the show, of course, and doing my guest appearance on This Old Dungeon. I think that was this month, which was a lot of fun to record. Thanks, guys, for having me on. It's been an eventful month, and I expect it's going to be an eventful run up to the end of the year. So we'll see how it all goes. But no matter what else is coming up, at the end of this week, we're going to have a new episode, whether special or regular. And I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. Thank you for listening, and thank you very much for supporting Monster Man on Patreon. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.